Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The Beyond Sleep Training Podcast, a podcast dedicated to sharing real tales of how people have managed sleep in their family outside of sleep training culture. Because sleep looks different with a baby in the house. And because every family is different, there is no one-size-fits-all approach to take. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is being recorded, the Kalkadoon people. I pay my respects to the elders of this nation and the many other nations our guests reside in from the past, present and emerging. We honour Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and the unique cultural and spiritual relationships to the land, water and seas, as well as their rich contributions to society, including the birthing and nurturing of children. Welcome back to the Beyond Sleep Training Podcast. I'm your host, Carly Grubb, and with me today, I have Tina Ward. Tina, you're coming to us all the way from the UK, is that right?
Yes, I ended up here.
Excellent. And Tina is a part of the Beyond Sleep Training Project peer support group, and she was kindly volunteered to come on the show with me after I put a bit of a call out to people who would be keen to share their experiences with us. So welcome today, Tina.
Thank you.
And can you tell us a little bit about who's in your family and how you ended up in the UK? Because it sounds like that wasn't where you were originally from.
No, I'm Estonian and I never really planned to stay, but you know how those things go. You go for a little late gap year and then you get married and have children and then you're quite happy to have to stay. Yeah, I'm the accidental immigrant. I am sorry. But I'm quite happy here now, so I don't plan on uprooting ourselves again and I'm going anywhere. So it's me, my husband who's Irish, and our 5-year-old son and 22-month-old daughter, the second one. You don't exactly know how old they are.
Yeah, she's getting close to two. She's yeah. About there.
She's about there.
Lovely. Lovely. Fantastic. And so for our listeners, can you tell us, before you had your first babe, how did you think you were going to approach sleep with your family?
I think I had the usual illusions of that they sleep. I don't think I ever considered that they have to be trained to sleep. That wasn't a concept I was familiar with at all. And it was talked about a lot with my first because he did not sleep. And so we were the hourly 45 minutes that family.
The little sparkler baby. And so yeah. Do you think you hadn't got any of that background sleep training noise in your head? Was that because no. Estonian culture would approach sleep differently? Or was it you hadn't been around babies and sleep to know any of it?
I hadn't really been around babies and I had mine quite late. So the first one, I was 33 just. And somehow all my friends had children back home separately. So when I went to visit, no one really talked about it that much. I knew a couple of friends who did some training in that sense, but I didn't pay attention to it because they weren't my babies and my brain hadn't quite switched over yet. Because it's surprising what having children does to your head.
Definitely. And it comes into your importance levels too. So your brain starts to register the information. So before he was born, did you have yourself, how did you set up before he arrived?
I knew that I wanted him next to me. It was never a question of separating him into a separate room or anything like that. So we had the whole, like the next to me sleeping arrangement, we had a little crib. And that was my thought. We took the side down. So it was side card on. So we were in essence co-sleeping, I guess, but not bed sharing. And I think we managed that way for quite some time. And then sort of the health visitors and everything come into play and they say, oh, yes, you can move them into their own room when they're 6 months. And I think we tried, stupidly. I don't know why. Because he was up all the time. I have no idea what I was thinking. And my dad did look at me and say, like, a little bit early, what are you doing? And I was like, no, that's what you're supposed to do. So it was very much what Google said at the time. And I don't think I was digging deep enough to find. We never let him cry. I responded every second. He lived on top of me, kind of still does. He's 5 now. So we never trained, even though it was spoken about quite a few times as an option.
So when you first had him, was he like, did you have a bit of a honeymoon period with him as a newborn, or was he super wakeful from the very beginning?
Yeah, we had the honeymoon period, and then we had teeth at about 4 months, which was fun. Also, the fun part was that I thought that I would obviously stop breastfeeding a baby who has teeth. Over 2 years. Also something that completely changed. But yeah, the sleep regression hit just with the teeth. And from then on, we went to 45 minutes, an hour and a half, the sleep cycle.
It's absolutely brutal. I've been there.
And I was not prepared. And we have no help. My parents are abroad. My husbands are far away. My neighbors had a small child, so that kind of helped. At least I had someone to make me coffee in the morning.
It helps, doesn't it? Like just the little things, but it probably doesn't sound like it was enough because that is an extremely intense time. So how long did that intensity last for your babe?
Honestly, we bought a house when he was about a year, 18 months, and it was still going. And by that time, I had to go back to work full time. We had a renovation on our hands, and we had a kid who woke up 5 times a night.
Oh, brutal.
It wasn't great.
No, I can imagine. And so how would you handle his wakes at this stage? What was working or not working for
you? Feet to sleep every time. And it pains me to say at some point when I tweened because I wasn't functioning at all. And the night tweening wasn't great. My husband helped. So he would console him. He would hold him. Because as soon as he was on me, the only thing he wanted was boob. Nothing else would even come into consideration. And because I was away so much, I was working 5 days a week full time. So I fully understand why he was doing it. But I understand that now, looking back, and it frustrated me hugely at the time. And I feel so guilty about it still. It's just I had so much on my plate that I didn't do any of the simple things. I didn't have nights to myself. I was painting doors or doing something else completely irrelevant at the time. But we had a house that needed to be lived in. And I didn't take any vitamins. I didn't rest. I didn't sleep. All of the things kind of came in together. And yeah, I should have probably read a bit more and rested a lot more. But it wasn't the option at the time.
Yeah, I can look back on my night weaning of my first baby, and I night weaned him similar, very supremely wakeful person. I was actually pregnant at the time with our second baby, and the aversions were properly, like, really getting me good. And I know that what I did at the time certainly felt like the right thing for me and him. Mm-hmm. But it's that benefit of hindsight where I actually can see that it was actually still pretty rough on him. And yeah. if I knew a bit more about things that I know now, I probably would have approached it differently. But I really was just doing the best I could at the time. And in the circumstances I found myself in, it sounds similar to you, where it's like you can look back on something and think, yeah, I'd probably do that different now.
Yeah.
But that wasn't then. So I think we can both give ourselves some grace for that, because I'm sure we were both doing just the best we could at the time. And it's messy, isn't it? It's really messy.
It is, and no one really prepares you for it. I think it would have been hugely different if we had a bigger community that does tell you what's normal and does remind you that you need to take care of yourself in order to take care of other little beings and things like that. And it wasn't happening.
And sometimes life doesn't always let you do that too, isn't it? Like apart from having the community that facilitates that, sometimes it's just this cluster of things that come into your life and they're not always avoidable. And they can make it very challenging to be able to make any other sense of it. So you can see lots of families make decisions that aren't necessarily their ideal, but it was just the best that they could do at that time. And I think that's just reality. So thank you for sharing that part of your story. Mm-hmm. And so after you night-weaned him, was he still very wakeful at that stage? What would you do instead
to
tell him? He was better?
He was better. He would sleep longer stretches at that point. I think we just kind of muddled through. So by the time he was two, we just under two, I think, we were down to the evening feed and that was it. And he would take a bottle. So that wasn't really the main reason why I was still feeding. I could always pump and feed him a bottle or give him just basic milk by that age anyway. And I think we kept going out of habit and it was nice. I didn't really find an issue with it. He was so happy.
And especially if you're apart from each other all day, it's a beautiful way to reconnect, I think, especially around that age group, because they're still so very little really, aren't
they? Tiny. And I don't think I really understood how fast the time would go.
I think that first baby too, everything seems to happen around you and you don't really have that full grasp. But I know with my second and my third baby, you look back and think of your first baby at that age and go, wow, he was really tiny when I was expecting, X, Y, Z. Yeah. But yet you don't have that same context, do you?
No. And funnily enough, the second one grows up significantly faster.
Oh,
I don't know how that's possible, but
it's not fair.
It just goes poof. And I know what I'm doing now. Take your time. You're fine. You can take ages.
It's like that with any of their things that they do, isn't it? I remember when my third baby, actually, she was decided to do everything super fast. And I remember when she just started, she was rolling both ways at 6 weeks. I'm like, stop it. Stop. You're meant to be my little newborn slug for a bit longer.
They're so cute when they're that age.
I know. They're beautiful. But yeah, you're right. It absolutely seems to go into warp speed and it's very not fair when you're actually really enjoying it as well. And so he was still having his night feed when he was two, sleeping a bit of longer stretches. Was he still napping by day? Like how are days looking with him?
Yeah, he would still nap in the day. He will still fall asleep if we're in the car in the day. He sleeps now. I still snuggle him to sleep. He was five in July. And it's nice now. It has changed from that, oh my God, it's going to take me 2 hours to put him down or something random like that. It's our reconnection time. We have the books from school and just general catch up or Lego or something. And I snuggle him to sleep and it takes me 10 minutes. And then he sleeps. And then he wanders in anywhere between midnight and 5 a.m.
Lovely.
We all squeeze into bed together.
Very nice. And but there's no stress around that kind of he's still waking, but it's no longer anything that impacts on your sleep or well-being.
Oh, he'll kick me in the nighttime and wake me up, but it doesn't bother me anymore.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think it's so important for people who are listening along and they're right in the trenches to know that this is how it progresses. Because I think sometimes people are scared hearing that these older children still need some support to sleep or that they're still waking and coming in. Yeah, they're doing those things, but it's not like a negative impact on. No,
it's a hugely different thing.
It really is. And it's and the needing a cuddle to sleep is actually something precious rather than anything that's like a something you'd regret because you've done that all his life.
I've got a couple of tiny regrets, but I never left him to scream. I went and slept at the neighbor's house at some point when he was 8 months old because I was losing the will to live. I just couldn't do it anymore. And my husband had him. So he took a bottle and all that kind of stuff, but there was a lot of screaming that night. He was obviously held the entire time, but I wasn't there. And now my nearly two-year-old, I have never left her. We have never been apart. And it's such a different thing.
I can just so imagine, though, that the feelings and the what went into your decision to need that night away, though, when he was 8 months. And it sounds like as much as you might regret it or whatever feelings you have now, it probably, once again, similar to the night weaning at the time, was probably exactly still what you needed to do with where you were at in your
to function.
Journey. Exactly.
I was at the stage where I was afraid to get up off the floor with him because I was dizzy.
Yeah.
I was afraid I'd fall over.
I think few people can relate to that level of sleep deprivation. I've been there as well. And it's an extraordinarily brutal experience for you in that moment. But I think even reflecting back on it, it's hard to actually fathom what
how
you've been
tired
through.
You were.
Yeah. It's like the next level of fatigue. But it's you know, at that point, you know, there's different ways different people need to handle that. And if your way of being okay was to go and take that night, I'm glad that you were able to do that and your husband was able to buffer your baby while you needed to do that.
Yeah.
So always like go easy on yourself there because once again, like you did what you needed to do at the time.
I had that luxury that I could.
Thank
we had no sort of daytime help or anything like that. And that was the savior. My neighbor in general, honestly, was, I think, huge help because she had a second one and she was so calm throughout just her movements of how she handled the second child, but just almost in slow motion. And she's not a slow motion kind of person, but it was hugely different when she was with her daughter. And I feel the same now with the second one. You are so much calmer. So I'm not sure whether the second one sleeps because I'm calmer or they're just different. I don't think I'll ever know.
I don't think you'll ever know either, but I do. You hear people who've got their little sparklers as their second or their third baby, and it feels like at whatever point they come into the crew, they just shake up the whole world because they're really not your average style of baby. And I think only people who've experienced that level of intensity can really understand what we're talking about for that kind of thing. But tell me more. I want to hear about your second baby now. So she came along. How old was your first guy? When she was
So the first one was 3.5 and we planned it that way. But the second one came early. Ooh. So she was 2 months premature. So we were in the hospital for 2 months. Things went horribly wrong with the pregnancy and it was such a shock because with the first one, he went over. He was happy in there. He was not coming out. And he was always this strong, really ahead, really just on it, little child. And then we had this second tiny £3.5 bundle. And she was really poorly in the beginning. And because she was in the hospital for 2 months, I wasn't co-sleeping. I wasn't doing any of it. But she came out of hospital, breastfed, and went straight into the next to me at home. And she's perfectly fine.
You did so well managing to breastfeed through a 2 month hospital stay. Well done, you.
It was pumping. It was pumping for the start because they don't obviously feed at that age when they come out of that gestation. And it was hard work. However, some women do that fully for the whole year or however they do it exclusively. And I don't know how.
It's impressive.
But we did it.
You did it. And you managed to get her to the breast as well.
She did that one.
That is impressive.
Well done.
Well done to the two of you because that is no mean feat because, you know, like a lot of people that experience is the reason that things don't necessarily work for their breastfeeding experience. So well done you. That's impressive.
I'd done one before, so I kind of knew what I was doing, but she figured it out, so she did really, really well.
Awesome. And so you got your little love home and how was life with her then or life with two little people really?
Lockdown. Life with two was lockdown. We came home on Sunday and the country shut down on Monday.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm probably the only person to say this, but I was grateful for that. Because there are so many complications that can come with viruses and things to all the really poorly newborns and who are early and just in general. So the whole pass the baby event was cancelled, which worked really well. So we just hid and just kind of were in our little bubble. My eldest was smitten. So he was absolutely wonderful. I don't think we've got a picture of him holding that tiny little thing. I think she was about 4 pounds, 5 pounds maybe when we brought her home. So tiny still.
Yeah.
Tiny, tiny. And yeah, they're gorgeous.
That is
they're
so
still really good. And she slept longer stretches. She did 3 hours. She went through a period of the 2 hourly wakings. But she was never like Thomas. And because obviously in the hospital she was timely feeds and she was tube fed and all that because it was all very medical. But at home we switched to Boob and it was demand feeding, as kind of usual. And she did do 2 hourly at some point, but I don't think she ever went any more frequent than that. At least I don't remember it.
Such a different experience for you. So you
hugely different.
How did you feel within yourself then? Like, were you still finding you were getting periods of time where you were still very tired, or were you feeling pretty well rested? How did that look?
I was okay. I think because we had done Thomas,
yeah,
as a
you're
family,
broken in.
Yeah. So it wasn't sort of. It was always easier. It was always such a much easier than Tommy was, and it wasn't. It was hard going at some point because obviously we were all locked in as well and you get annoyed with each other and at some point it's a small house and it's 4 people now. And one of them still needs to be entertained and my husband would take him for 2-3 hour walks every single day just to kind of manage him because he's still really, really active.
And toddlers and in lockdown, like that's, you know, they're toddlers, whether they're in lockdown or not. Hey, it's really, really intense time. But it's great that your husband was able to take him out and entertain and wear him out a little bit. But that actually brings me to relationships. How did things look for you guys I know it was a real strain on my husband and my relationship, that first sparkler baby. We struggled to find our feet. We struggled to find a way to work together. How was that for you guys?
Yeah. It was a really huge learning curve. And I must admit, at some point I was so tired, I shouted at him with a voice I didn't think I could make. I wasn't sure that sound would come out of my lungs, but it was horrific at some point. And it also came because of the fact that I thought, well, since I'm at home with the baby, so I obviously do everything, which is insane.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he also thought because he goes to work, he needs to obviously rest at nighttime and all the rest of it. So Tommy was born in July. And at Christmas time, my husband had 2 weeks off. So that was his holiday. Mm-hmm. And so during the holiday, we figured we're both home. We'll try and do 50-50. And he told me at the end of the holiday that he's now more tired than when he started. And that was us doing 50-50.
And
that kind of clicked.
Yes. Yes, sir. That is correct.
And he's such a good husband and father in the sense that he really does want to try. He wants to help. He wants to be useful. And even he found it so unfathomable as to how hard this is going to be. But once you have a baby, both of your lives are going to get harder, not just the mum. The mum isn't supposed to be some half-dead grey figure that just functions. Like, obviously, yes, if your husband is doing brain surgery, probably he needs to have a little bit more rest than you do. But most modern occupations, there isn't a safety issue there. You can be tired.
Well, it's the same thing. It's like you're mothering a small human. Like your occupation is also dependent on you being able to function safely as well. So it's that real weighing up a value of functioning, isn't it? And it's not a competition, and I think that can be very hard for couples to understand. And I know for me and my husband, it very much was the case, though. We came to the agreement that there was no use us both being ridiculously sleep deprived for the sake of us both sharing that experience. What we found was that for our baby, he was very much all about me during the night, but that meant that Dad was responsible for buffering that in the hours that he could outside of that time, because, you know, he wasn't the supremely sleep deprived one, and therefore he could step up in those ways, but it wasn't, it didn't mean that all of his responsibilities disappeared. Yeah. He still played a part in making sure that our family was okay.
David did nappies and things like that, and still, with, if you have somebody who wakes all the time, so we would try and have dinner around about 6 o'clock, something like that, 7, and I wouldn't be able to finish a meal for months and months and months and months. He would be awake already as soon as we would put him down. He was that kind of a baby. With the second one, we didn't bother putting her anywhere. She was just on top of me.
Yeah.
And it was fine. And it worked. And no bother. And if I did put her down, she'd stay there. And it's such a novelty.
It can be so different depending on their personalities. Hey, like I know for our family, the times that Dad really owned were like while I was trying to eat my dinner, or I remember after I first get him down for the night, because he'd do the same thing, like he'd last no time at all, but I'd go have a nice long hot shower to myself, I'd finish a meal, and any waking that occurred in that time was Dad's problem, and he would, you know, cuddle and rock and do whatever he needed to do, but I needed that bit of protected time for me to be able to do my things and basic care, like being able to shower and, you know, brush my teeth with, you know, that kind of, it wasn't doing anything outlandish, but it was protected time and it meant a lot to me because I knew I had it. And so that was one of our times we had. And then early morning waking, that was Dad's job.
Yes.
Before he went to work, any early morning wake for play, that was Dad. And I would sleep for a little bit longer. Was that a similar, did you guys have those kind of agreements as well?
We still do, to be honest. He takes them downstairs for breakfast and I kind of have my shower, wander down. We all go school, work, everywhere else. And it still works that way. Because I still kind of want, even though the second one self-weaned at 18 months, devastated. Absolutely devastated.
How dare she?
So I'm not a necessity anymore. She doesn't feed in the nighttime. She just wants to cuddle and she doesn't really care who cuddles her. Either of us will do. She will prefer me if she's got me in the bed, but either of us will do. So we both kind of wake up anyways.
Yeah. It's just nice to be able to have that bit of balance. And I do think too, with the second baby, the toddler, like being able to share the responsibilities too, like we really needed to work as a team for bedtime. Mm-hmm. Once that second baby had arrived and once again with the third. So I think sometimes with the first baby, it can be a bit tricky trying to find your feet, but you do eventually get your groove.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Difficult to find what is it that we can and cannot do. I think we had the illusion of that we can still have dinner together. That's our time of day. No, it's not. We should have split it in hindsight, but that's hindsight for you.
Yeah, well, that's it. We just started eating, like I know with like by the time we did second and third babies, we just ate earlier. We just, as soon as our husband would be home from work, we'd eat early together as a family to make sure that everybody got a meal in, and then we'd start the, you know, the after. And so often there'd be a baby being jiggled on someone's knee or on the boob while you're doing the one-handed dinner thing, but you kind of just figure out. And it, I guess that was something with my first. It's almost like you have to figure out how those things practically look. Mm-hmm. And they don't always involve having the baby off and settled on their own. Sometimes it is actually just working around it, baby in carrier, baby on knees. Like they're not always tidily away. And it's
the illusion we had. Mm. Exactly. I had the idea of they are obviously on their own somewhere by that time, and that's our time, and it seemed like such an intrusion and stress and everything, and it's not really, it's a preparation, it's how unprepared we are for the extra family member. We don't know what that brings,
no, or how it can look and still be okay, because that's the thing, isn't it, you can have this version of how it should be or how you want it to be, and then it's nothing like that. But you can still be okay. You just got to figure out how to make it work for you and your family. And it's okay to grieve what you thought it would be as well, because I think that's part of the process, isn't it? Getting, you're allowed to go, wow, this is a little bit not what I thought. I don't really like it. But then get on with the next part of life.
Yeah, I think that letting go took me particularly a really, really long time. I loved my first one. I obviously still the obsession I have with my children. I don't think even that outweighed the fact that I was slowly disappearing and I was nowhere on the food chain anymore. It was very much the last one.
I think that's it's part of matrescence. So I know you hear this from a lot of people. It's like you get completely stripped away. You lose all your sense of self, but then you find yourself again, you rebuild, but it's a new version of you. And it's all letting the things go that are never going to come back, but that's okay, because what's coming forward is also going to be a beautiful thing. And I don't know about you, but once you get through that really awkward and messy stage of your matrescence, you really come into your own again, don't you?
It is, yeah. You find that calmness and strength in some sense. There's something really nice I read a while ago somewhere that giving birth is only part of the process. It's the year after the birth where you give birth to the mum, give birth to the mother inside you. Because that, I'm pretty sure, was a whole lot more painful than something ever was.
Well, you think about adolescence and all the growing pains and the angst and the awkwardness of adolescence. It's the same thing again. It's an enormous change in your body and your functions and your systems and all your social structures. It's awkward and messy, but wow, when you come out the other side, it really is quite a beautiful thing. So for anyone in the thick of it right now, it will get easier. It's not always going to feel this messy. Now, I'm just looking at our time. We're already filling up our 30 minutes, but I wouldn't want to finish without asking you, do you have a tip you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Go with the flow, the usual thing that everyone says, but it works, because they will not fit into your plan, more likely than not.
And there's only disappointment to be had if you really insist on it, isn't there?
About the expectation. Set those really, really low and you'll be golden.
That's exactly how I ended up feeling as well. It's like, if I don't hold the high expectations, I can't be disappointed. Mm-hmm. Makes a world of difference. Thank you so much for coming on today, Tina. And thank you for being so honest with our listeners, because this is why we wanted to have these stories on the podcast, so people don't feel alone. They could see how the process has been for other people, and they can feel the sense of hope that there is going to be light at the end of the tunnel, especially when you're really in the thick of it. So thank you so much, Tina. That was fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
It was beautiful. Thanks for everybody listening along. And if you haven't already been able to review the show for us, if you don't mind dropping into your favorite listening platform and give us a 5-star review. This is actually how podcast distribution works. The more 5-star reviews and comments and things we get, the further they spread the show onto other people's platforms as well. So we really appreciate your time today if you could do that for us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I really hope you enjoyed the podcast today. The information we discussed was just that, information only. It is not specific advice. If you take any action following something you've heard from our show today, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that advice be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or any other advice. Please reach out to me if you do have any questions or if there's a topic you'd really like us to be covering. And if you know somebody who'd really benefit from listening to our podcast, please be sure to pass our name along. Also, check out our free peer support group, the Beyond Sleep Training Project, and our wonderful website, www.littlesparklers.org. If you'd like even more from the show, you can join us as a patron on Patreon, and you can find a link for that in our show notes. If listening is not really your jam, we also make sure we put full episode transcripts on our Little Sparklers website for you to also enjoy, and fully captioned YouTube videos as well on our Little Sparklers channel. So thanks again for listening today. We really enjoy bringing this podcast to you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.